is coming. Between light and darkness. Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
Sparkle and oh how you shine. The blush on your cheeks is more than the wine, and he must do something that I didn't do. Whatever he's doing, it looks good on you. You look so him, that's easy to see. You look so good in love. I wish you still wanted me. He must have stolen some stars from the sky and gave them to you to wear in your eyes. I had my chances, but I set you free. And now I wonder why I couldn't see. You look so good in love. You want him, that's easy to see. You look so you still wanted me.
Darling, I've wasted a lot of years not seeing the real you. But tonight your beauty is shining through. And I never took the time to let you know. So before he takes you away, please let me say,
you look so good in love. You want him, that's easy to see. You look so good in love. I wish you still wanted me. You look so good in love. You want him, that's easy to see. You look so good
in love. Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Get your good rockin' daddy down from Tennessee. I'm just out off and back from San Antonio with the radio blasting and the bird dog on. Yeah, speed travel, my head's down the town, but no local yoga gonna shut me down. Me and my boys got the trigger around, and we'll come a thousand miles from a guitar town.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I am kind of just hanging around. But I heard someone calling my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep guitar. Smoking in Texas with a hammer down and a rockin' little combo from a guitar
band. Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
Love to hear the steel bell coming on the asphalt. Wake up in the middle of the night in a truck stop. Stumble in a restaurant. Wonder why I don't stop.
And it's time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
Sorry about Friday, about Liberty Lounge. We had an unexpected internet outage, and we didn't get it back until last night. So hopefully it'll hold in there for us tonight, and we can keep going. Let me run over here and make sure the sound is okay and see who all is in the chat room. It looks like we have Desert Rat, Doc, and Granny. Look, well, Washington is well represented here, Texas, New Mexico. Handful of anonymous, actually a double handful of anonymous. So, new guy, Curtis. Curtis, we're glad you made it in here tonight. Hopefully what you find, what you hear will be good news for you, pleasant for you, and you'll come back and join us again. So every Monday and Wednesday we do this from 8 to 9 Pacific time. And then on Fridays, we do primarily classic country music and kind of get away from the doom and gloom here a little bit. So anyway, lots of doom and gloom to talk about tonight. My goodness, we got the primarily here in just a little bit, we're going to talk about the execution of Daniel Shaver right here in Arizona by Mesa Police. We're going to talk about that in excruciating detail here in a little bit. I want to tell you about some classes we got coming up here, a couple classes. We still got one coming up in Bullhead City, Arizona. That will be SK. I've seen SK before, I think. But anyway, hopefully he gets his or her. I'm not sure who SK is. But anyway, hopefully they get their audio up and running. Somebody might type in there having to refresh their browser, and sometimes that brings the audio up if they're having problems. So, or tell them how to click on the little players up at the top of the page if they need to. So anyway, Bullhead City, we're having an enhanced concealed weapons class. Got several people interested up there. And in Washington, hopefully, if everything goes well, everything's going well right now. We've got a place to shoot up there. Northwest Heavy has been gracious enough to do a little footwork for us up there and be able to find a good, safe, legal place to shoot. Generally, we have to shoot on private land. More often than not, a range will not allow the type of shooting that we do. A lot of fast holster work and a lot of stuff that would be considered unconventional to to your typical shooters, your NRA shooters and stuff. It's a little bit different than that. So, as a matter of fact, Northwest Heavy's taken the class up there before. Yakima Glock's taken it before. Granny Red has taken it. Let's see, that's all I see in the chat room there right now. But that class will be probably somewhere between April and June. It's very much in the planning stages right now. We're going to try to plan it around some of the rain up there and everything. We've had good luck in Washington so far. We've done, how many classes have we done up there? One of them was an indoor class, so that one didn't count. We've done 1, 2, 3, 4. Done either 4 or 5 classes up there between Vancouver and Yakima. And, yeah, that's right, Doc. The, And Granny, if we get this class together in Vancouver, if you're interested and you'd like to come over and go through that, I owe you for some stuff there, so we can talk about that if you think you might like to come over there. Okay, anyway, let's move on. Let me see what else we got here real quick. Let's just go right on into the Daniel Shaver thing. It's been all over Facebook. My goodness, I mean, just everywhere, all over Facebook. This happened a year ago or so. Hang on just a minute. I think we're about to experience some difficulties here. Stand by 1 minute. Hold on. All right, sorry for the dead air, guys. We got some stuff going on here. We wasn't sure what was happening. All right. This the guy's name was Daniel Shaver. He was a bug exterminator. And he was staying in a hotel. I think it was a La Quinta's, if I remember right, in Mesa, Arizona. And he's had a few drinks, evidently quite a few, and from what I understand, he was like 0.3 over the legal limit. I'm going to have his paper right there. Yeah, that'll be all right. And in the course of his work, he has a little airsoft type gun that I guess he, yeah, that sounds good. I'm not sure if he shoots mice with it or what the heck goes on, grasshoppers or whatever. And he had this gun in his hotel room. It's a non-lethal type gun. Like I said, it's some version of an airsoft or something like that. And let me turn this down just a little bit. I think your audio is probably way too high. Maybe that's a little better. And apparently he was showing this gun to some of his friends, and one or more of them were standing by the window, and somebody saw it. Contrary to what some people said on Facebook, he did not point it out the window, but people could see through the window and see him handling it. And naturally, busybody, they called the cops. Now, I get it. I understand that everybody's petrified, scared to death that another Las Vegas or something's going to happen. And rightfully so. I can't imagine what goes through some people's mind thinking about stuff like this. But, you know, on the other hand, there still needs to be some common sense. I mean, the windows, I'd bet money, good money, that the windows were closed. Most of your La Quintas with a window that faces a lobby or something like that are windows that don't open anyway. So somebody just saw that and said, oh my goodness, they're going to shoot up the whole place, kill everybody that's big enough to die. That's kind of what I was thinking. So now let's stop right there and back up just a little bit. What is about to happen to Daniel Shaver? How do I put this without giving everything away? Well, I just won't put it right now. Let me talk a little bit more about it, and we'll come back to this. Murphy. I don't know who Murphy is. Murphy, I'm glad you dropped in here tonight. Curtis, I understand a year ago was before Las Vegas. Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. So I see what you're saying, yeah. So, but I think that the idea of it is the same. It's just that Vegas hadn't happened. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Anyhow, be that as it may, they call the cops, and, of course, they show up in force, not knowing what they're up against. Okay, now, so far I'm with them. I understand. I'm not sure that whoever called the cops did the right thing. I know that there's some merit to, you know, see something, do something, call somebody, whatever. Certainly there is. And so that's what happened. They called the cops, and they tried to call Daniel's room. And I apparently the cops had knocked on the door, and nothing had happened. They got a hold of the front desk, and they called. And anyway, they told him that the cops are outside and that they needed to come out. So they went and opened the door. And this is when all the trouble started. Open that door and see what's going on over there, would you? Take your gun with you. Ain't no telling what might be in there. And so they immediately start barking orders. Now I'm talking barking. And a lot of... Is it really? Well, just all you gotta do is just squeeze that handle and just take him outside and over the balcony. We just, with the noise we was heard was a mouse in a trap over here. That trap sets up there for weeks at a time and does nothing, and now all of a sudden we've got a mouse right in the middle of the show. Anyway, from the video, you know, the video was released a year later from the cops' body cam. And another thing that was released a year later, or at least was not shown to the jury, was an inscription on one of the cops' weapons. We'll come to that, back to that in a minute. So there was a female and Daniel Shaver. The orders that were given to the female were fairly clear, and I don't believe that she was quite as looped as Daniel was, and she was sober enough that she was able to follow the directions pretty well. Daniel, on the other hand, was three sheets in the wind, maybe four or five sheets in the wind. And he wasn't doing well. He was petrified. He was scared to death. And he was trying to follow directions. And some people say that the cop that did the shooting was not the one that gave the directions. Okay, that's irrelevant. Whoever gave the directions were not giving them very well. When they told the girl to come forward, they said, you know, they had her down, face down, cross your left foot over your right, and then push yourself up with your hands, leaving your feet crossed, and crawl on your knees towards me. And she did that pretty well. And that was fairly easy to understand. Now, it's difficult to do. If you try it, it's not easy for especially somebody that's already drunk. But she did pretty well. And when they got to him, he was having a hard time following directions. One of the reasons, because he was being hollered at like a dog. And the orders were kind of confusing. And at one point, he was down, face down, fingers interlaced behind his head, feet crossed. At that point right there, that should have ended the drama. And they could have handcuffed him right there and done whatever they had planned to do. There was no reason to make him come closer. None whatsoever. They had backup. Having him come closer and do the same thing did not accomplish anything. And so they, Murphy, all this over a pellet gun. Now, of course, in the cop's defense, and I hate to defend this cop, I do. Now let me stop for just a minute. Let me tell everybody, for those of you especially that's new and don't know me, I'll tell you I am 100% pro law enforcement. 100%, maybe 101%. I am not
by any remote stretch of the imagination, anti-cop. However, there's beginning to be more and more and more stories. As long as there ever is one cop out there, only one, that's good, I will still be pro-cop, and I'll be pro-law enforcement institution, whether there's any good cops or not. But, you know, we have the thing with Lavoie Finicum and all this stuff that's been going on with the trials, the Bundy Ranch trials, and so many, good Lord, so many incidents where cops have done worse than some gangbanger might do. But there's still good cops out there. Thank God. There's still a lot of good cops out there. So it just so happens that this Philip, what was his name, Brailsford, is not one of them. He was on an adrenaline high. He is an egotistical, arrogant maniac. And the orders that he were given, he gave, what's his name, Daniel. He was down, feet crossed, fingers interlaced behind his head. And then he tells him to get up, and then he said, crawl over here. He did, and that's exactly what his word, crawl over here, crawl to me. And all this time it was going on, he was trying to give him direction. Daniel was having a hard time following. And the cop says, there's a very real possibility. You make a mistake, I will kill you. I don't know where he got his training, but I'll guarantee you that there was no place, there's no law enforcement training facility in the world that would have told him to say that. I can see that there's be a very real possibility that you might get shot. If we see anything that appears to be a display of force or violence towards us or something, we will respond in kind or something like that. I get that, and I'm not opposed to that. I am very much opposed to saying, if you make a mistake, I will kill you. That right there, all by itself, was enough to, as far as I'm concerned, enough to get him, at the very least, a negligent homicide. Now, it should have been second-degree murder. But let's go on with the story. He starts to crawl, and then the cop just goes ballistic and starts hollering at him. Here this kid is just scared to death and unable to follow conflicting directions. And there's a guy standing there with his AR-15 trained on him the whole time. Okay, Murphy, I think I know who you might be, or at least I know where you come from now anyway. Get back, lost my train of thought there. Okay, they got him. Now, he's in baggy shorts, and they tell him to crawl forward. He gets down, and his big mistake, yeah, I perfectly understand, as he reaches back to pull his shorts up. The cop, if he has any training and experience, he should be able to know that in baggy shorts, cutoffs maybe, cutoffs especially with the belt, yeah, I understand, but in baggy, floppy shorts like that, there is no way that he could have any kind of a weapon other than a credit card or a small plastic knife or something, which any contact weapon should not be considered a threat in the position that he was in. Everybody says, well, should they have waited until he produced a gun? Well, yeah. If he was going to produce one, the guy was had his sights on him, on the guy. If there's no way from that position that somebody could bring a gun out, and especially when the guy is sitting there all hopped up just looking for an excuse to shoot anyway. But
at that point, we can give him the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, he feared for his life, all right? The cop did. However, I still say that the cop created the circumstance. If he would have just gone back to where he was when he was, the guy was laying there with his feet crossed, his fingers interlocked behind his head, face down on the carpet, none of this would have happened. He should have gone, and especially he had backup. He had somebody there to watch the girl. There was more than one cop, more than two cops there. I think there was three or four, if I get the story right. Now, Curtis, I'll say also that it's not always, I don't think it's always, I know it's not always a good thing to wait until you see a weapon. If the guy was standing and out on the street and the dim light, I get that completely. I understand. And you'd certainly want video to back you up on that. But in the position that he was in, there's no way that he couldn't got that gun out fast enough under those exact conditions to harm anyone, in my very biased opinion. Did you reset that? I don't think so either. Anyway. So, yeah, sorry, we got all these backstage conversations going on here. We're just having fun. So, he reaches back like he's reaching for a gun, pulling his shorts up, just like Lavoie did. Of course, Lavoie wasn't pulling his shorts up, but anyway. And the cop lit him up, shot him five times with an AR. Could he have used a less lethal weapon? You know, maybe a beanbag shotgun. Yeah, he could. However, I kind of understand why that's not what they had. They were called to something that could have possibly been a mass shooting, a terror attack. From the word, now, the cop didn't see the airsoft gun. He didn't know anything that was going on. He knows what the 911 officer told him, and that's it. So I understand why, some people say, well, why did he have a rifle up there to start with? Well, he had a rifle because he didn't know what he was going into. I have no problem with that. What I have a problem with is what is the exact details of what happened leading up to when the cop fired the shot. And it all could have been over. No muss, no fuss, no blood on the carpet, no taxpayer funded ammunition wasted if they had just went over and handcuffed him when he was laying on the ground. I can't believe that he didn't do that. So anyway, he gets fired later, 2 months after the fact. He gets fired for not following department procedures. And through all of it, now, here's another thing. On his weapon, on the dust cover, I can't believe the department even allowed this to happen. That doesn't tell me much for the Mesa department unless there's no way that they wouldn't have known that. I'm sure that the armors, they check those in, they get cleaned, maintained. Someone had to have known it was there. In the inside of his dust cover, in big letters, as big as would fit on that dust cover, it said, "You're effed." I tell people in my classes, never, ever put any type of inscription on your weapon. And when I say anything, I mean anything. Not Bible scriptures, verses, nothing. For the same reason I tell you, if you're going to carry a weapon, you don't walk around downtown wearing t-shirts and say, "Kill them all and let God sort them out." Or Smith & Wesson, "Don't leave home without it." Or have signs in your yard that says, "Never mind the dog, beware of owner. If you're found here tonight, you'll be found here in the morning." You know, all of this kind of stuff. We all know that that's all just amusing stuff for us. It means nothing to us. But to someone that is less knowledgeable about this, does it not look like something that indicates their attitude? And it has been used more than once. I'll tell you something else. The judge, there's been discussions come up about the judge, meaning Smith and Wesson. I mean, Taurus judge. Smith and Wesson has a similar thing. I think it's called the governor or some stupid thing. I think it's a ridiculous gun to have anyway. But there's discussion about judge. There's another one called, what was the other one called? The prosecutor or something like that. There's two or three of them with names like that. What does that look like to a non-gun person sitting on the jury? What, I mean, that should be a no-brainer. And he has this, "You're effed," on his dust cover. What does that make it look like he is? Curtis, they never threw out the evidence. It was never presented, from what I understand, because the judge said that it was prejudicial. You know, it's a funny thing about facts. Facts are very prejudicial. If that would have been shown to the jury, we might have had a different outcome. If the video would have been shown, the video was not released until just recently, very recently. And it has, let me look and see, public defender. Thank you, Sig Sauer. Yeah, the public defender was the other one. The circuit judge, Carping, Yakima Glock, thank you. Yeah, I've forgotten all these stupid names that Taurus and everybody has put on these guns. But be that as it may, what does it look like to the unknowledgeable person, to the non-gun person, and you're carrying a weapon that says, that's named the judge? Do you have a backup in your pocket called the jury? And between the two of them, are they the executioner? I don't know how they work that out, but it has come up in discussion more than once. And that's why it was not allowed to the jury, not allowed as evidence. I'm confident that the jury would have come up with a different verdict there. And then there's people say, well, it went to jury. It went to jury, and that's it. That's what they decided. You know, it doesn't mean anything to me. The legal process doesn't work as well. It's broke. Hell, O.J. Simpson went to jury. Did we all agree with that? The jury means nothing to me. It would mean more if you were able to. And that's why it ticks me off when people say they try to get out of jury duty. If I ever went to trial for something like this, I would want you people on my jury. I would want NM Glock and Mountain Shooter and Minnie and all y'all on my jury. Because you know what's going on. You're on my side. And you would look at it fair, and if I was guilty, you would tell them. If I was not, you would tell them. But I've seen so many soccer moms and whatnot that you're guilty simply by association, just because you have a gun or just because you were there or whatever, you're still guilty. Sig Sauer, as I understand it, there's so many things out there about this. As I understand it, the jury was not allowed to see this video, that it did not come out and was not released until sometime afterwards. I'm not absolutely positive, but from everything that I've gathered here, that's what I think. So those two things right there, it's bad enough. I blame the cop. He was itching by the inscription was, and the way he was hollering, if you make a mistake, there's a very real possibility that you'll be killed or something like that. The whole thing just tells me that he was hopped up on adrenaline or something else, I don't know, but certainly adrenaline. And Loner Jim said the jury did not see the video. And he was, it just appeared to me that the guy was anxious for him to make a mistake. There was no reason to taunt this kid the way he did. No excuse for that at all. And, you know, some of my cop friends think that he did the right thing. And we're kind of at odds with that because I very much, very, very damn much don't believe that he was right. It was right at the point where he reached back. He was kind of right. I can see how they might have let him go with that as he reached back to pull his shorts up. Okay. I don't agree. I think the cop was not paying attention. He was not exercising good situational awareness. Just because his hand moved up there, you should have known what he was wearing and that there was not possible for him to have anything other than a lightweight contact weapon inside those shorts. But, well, I'll say it's not possible. I would say it was highly unlikely. But, at any rate, then, it's not bad enough that he created the circumstance in which he became justified in the jury's mind in shooting him. He did get fired, I'll give him that, for not following department procedure, but he is still on the street. Since he was acquitted, he is still can be hired by virtually any law enforcement department out there. His address has been put all over Facebook. The guy, you know, I think that he's probably not in a, if I were him, I would be scared to death. Tell you the truth, if you get on Facebook and look at all the stuff going on there about this guy, he should be concerned for his safety. Now, let me tell you also, and to go along with what I told you a while ago, I am very pro-cop, very pro-cop, but I'm very anti-jackbooted thug. Which is what this guy was. And he'll get away with this one. If he gets hired onto another department, he'll do it again. Also, somebody posted another deal on another news story about him, that about the same cop that got involved in another excessive use of force case prior to this. So, but what I didn't finish my thought there. One thing that I'm seeing here, which I absolutely hate, is so much anti-cop on any cop, all cops on Facebook. I hate it. People that say those things are mental midgets. They're scared. They're letting their emotions govern what they say and what they think. And that's not cool. Yes, I do know good cops. I know cops out there that won't even give tickets for not using the car seat. I know a cop that stopped a guy out on the road out here, actually here in Arizona, that stopped a guy, it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He was doing 70 or 75 miles an hour in a 35 mile zone. Nobody else on the street except him and the cop. And he pulled him over, and he said, "So, what's your hurry?" The guy had an excuse, and I'm not going to go into detail about it because it might. I'm just not. But anyway, it had to do with his wife and a pregnancy. Let's just leave it at that. And the guy and the cop said, "You know what? Be careful. Have a good day, and get home to your wife." And let him go. That's a good cop. He wasn't posing a danger. There was nobody else on the road. fairly well lit. And is 70 excessive in a 35? Well, yeah. But under those exact circumstances, he let him go. I know another guy that was running for sheriff here, and he don't believe in giving tickets for not using car seats. He said that's the parents. If something happens to that baby, then this will be a premeditated murder or manslaughter or whatever they get him with. So, yes, they're very much our good cops out here. And some states certainly worse than others, some departments worse than others. And I'll tell you, I know for a fact, for an absolute fact, that there are good people in the FBI. Maybe not many, but I know some. And I can't stand these people get on there calling for the death of not just this law enforcement officer, but others. I despise that. Now, there's no way to, street justice may be the only thing that happens to this cop, and I don't know if anything, and like I said, I'm not condoning it. I despise that type of mindset. But he cannot be tried again for the same thing. He's protected by the Constitution, so unless somebody comes up with something new for some reason, it's a done deal. He is protected by the Constitution from being retried for the same crime. So here he is out on the street, and he should be fearful, because there are a lot of people calling for his head on Facebook. So, all right, let me see here. Damn, we spent 45 minutes talking about that. So I have a little song here that I want to play. This song goes out to Philip Mitch, I believe is his middle name. Let me make sure I get his last name. I forgot it. Brailsford, I think. Philip Mitch Brailsford. Philip, he's no longer a police officer, or at least unless he is somewhere else. But this song is for you.
Were you born an asshole? Or did you work it your whole life? Either way, it worked out fine, 'cause you're an asshole. You'll be an asshole the rest of your life.
Okay, well, that's enough of that. I think we've eat up enough time with that right now. So that is my... Oh, let me go back. So, okay, now we got pretty much the whole story out there. Let me go back and mention a couple of things. One thing I think... Yes, someone said that was very familiar, actually that was good friends with Daniel Shaver, had said, yes, Arizona's an open carry state and blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah, I get that. I understand completely. However, there are times when you should exercise good judgment. And walking, even if it's an airsoft gun. Now, Daniel Shaver may not be a gun guy. He may just be an exterminator. All he shoots is cockroaches. And don't understand what we understand about being careful, with toy guns, with airsoft guns or less lethal guns of any kind. Maybe he just didn't understand that. It should be common sense, but it may not be common sense to someone that is not trained the way many of us are. So, hey, Curtis, that's a long, distinguished background there of law enforcement. Congratulations for that. If this is one of the reasons, the primary reason that I, well, I, yeah, probably primary reason, one of the top two main reasons that I quit drinking. I quit drinking mostly because I started carrying a gun. This was in Georgia in 1992, and I got my first concealed carry permit. And I said, you know what? I just see this as not being a good thing. At some point, this was way before I had the degree of training that I do now and everything, but it was just common sense to me that carrying guns and drinking as much and as often as I did then was just probably not a good idea. And not being a gun guy, maybe Daniel Shaver didn't think about that. This is why, especially with all the terror attacks and everything going on, this is another reason why to put yourself at any degree whatsoever of, what's the word I'm looking for, drunkenness. That's not the word I'm looking for, but we'll use it for now because I can't think of the other one. Incapacitated, maybe. Any degree whatsoever is unacceptable. If there had been a real terror attack, let's say that you were walking down the hallway in Mandalay Bay when this guy opened fire and all of a sudden he comes out in the hallway with one of his guns and you decide that you want to go get commode hugging drunk and you left your gun in the room and there you are. To me, that's reason enough to absolutely abstain from any degree of alcohol whatsoever. I mean a drop. If you lick the coaster, the bottle top of one of those, and you've got any degree of it on your breath, it's going to come out in court. Yes, you passed the breathalyzer. But if they smelled it, and it comes out in the report, you can't unring a bell. They already know. Any degree of alcohol is absolutely, to me, totally unacceptable. Yeah, Murphy, you're right. Respect for the firearm and others, better way to live. Yeah, I agree. Booze and guns do not mix at all. I could spend another hour talking about accidents and things that have happened with people drinking and stuff. But, you know, we don't need to go into that. But I'll say that his drinking should have been harmless. He was in the safety and privacy of his own room. He should have been able to get as drunk as he wanted, but these kind of things happen. And if you're involved in anything at all, any type of crime, or I won't say involved, I'll say if you're present when something like that happens nearby or something like that, and you are three sheets to the wind, I just can't see anything good coming of it. So some of us probably take this a lot more seriously than others. My life is centered around my ability to protect myself and my family. So much so that when I went and got contacts, some of you regulars have probably heard this story before. When I went and got contacts several years ago, I walked out and everything was great. I could see well. And I went out to the range and I was having a hard time really focusing on my front sight like I wanted to.
And I said, well, that's these damn contacts. So I turned around that within the hour and went back to the eye doctor. And I said, Doc, this ain't gonna work. Here's what I need. And I put my fist out there at arm's length and stuck my thumb up. And I said, that is the center of my life. That needs to be the object of my focus. Make my focus perfect there. I'll deal with the rest of it. And he did. And I've been doing it that way for, 15 years or whatever it's been. Let's see, no, it's been 15 years. It's been about 11 years, 11 or 12 years. And I never look back because it is that important to me. My everyday carry, the way I carry on my jeans, on my right pocket, my right rear pocket, opposite of my wallet. I sew that pocket halfway up the center. One side holds my Leatherman, the other side holds a flashlight. They're like holsters. It's the same every time so that they don't get mixed up, fall together when I lean over and reach for my wallet on the other side or anything else. They're holsters. All of my jeans have holsters sewed into the back pocket because that's my everyday carry. My everyday carry is not my most day carry. It is my everyday carry. 365 days a year, 366 on leap years. Always. No exceptions. And I did the same thing with my drinking. Always. No exceptions. I quit. No. I won't have a cold beer with the boys just to be social. I'll have cold Diet Dr. Pepper with them. What the hell difference does it make what I drink? As long as I'm standing around socializing, can I drink a Coke or a bottle of water or something? If you want to drink beer, that's fine. What do you care what I drink? Anyway, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. And we had a failed terror attack in New York City today, early this morning. The guy was, if there's any such thing, this guy was an amateur suicide bomber. And he just pretty much blew himself up. All it didn't kill him. He's all burned up, but it didn't kill him. I saw the video where the guy, I don't know how far he fell from, but he fell out on the concrete hard. I mean, hard. It was actually quite comical to watch. But I still stand by my, as a matter of fact, that proves it right there. When I told everyone we need to watch out between Thanksgiving and New Year's, the day after New Year's, I think that we're up for more action than we want. I sincerely believe that we are not nearly done seeing things like this happen between now and New Year's. And this has already proved it. There's already been two since I said that. So, anyway, I would encourage everyone to be careful during this holiday period. If you insist on drinking, you know, I did my share of commode hugging drunk during New Year's. Now I look back and say, what's so special about New Year's Eve? Why is it imperative that everyone gets drunk on New Year's Eve? I don't get it. I really don't understand anymore. Even though I've been there and done it, I look back at my own self and say, why was I such a retard? Just did not understand that. So, why is it, what do you mean, why is it failed? If you're talking about the suicide bomber, I guess it was a success in as much as it almost killed the bomber. That was cool. But it was failed because it went off prematurely and did not injure. I think two or three other people were slightly injured. He was hurt the worst. And there was an explosion, but it wasn't where it was supposed to be and didn't do what it was supposed to do. So anyway, that's a good thing. But anyway, through this holiday period, I hope everyone really pays close attention to where you're going. If you're going to drink, use some common sense in what you do, where you go, how you conduct yourself. I'm not sure that Murphy, there's a Muhammad would be ashamed. Yeah,
he sure would.
I'm not sure that we're going to have a show Wednesday night. I may have to have the tinker put something on for me. I'm going out of town for a little project, and I may not be back in time. So if I'm not, I'll have the tinker put on something enlightening for you. I do have every intention of being now Friday. You know, I don't know. I may not be here Friday either. Man, that would suck. Oh, I'll think about it, and I'll make sure that I put it in the chat room, and I will put it also on my Facebook page and everything so that everyone knows what's going on there. So there you have it. I just didn't get to half of the stuff that I wanted to do, but I got to some of it. And absolutely, Curtis, thank you, and Merry Christmas to everyone. I haven't talked to Amy yet about what we want to do on our Christmas is on a Monday, 2 weeks from today. I will let you know before this week over what we're planning on doing as far as radio shows go for Christmas and New Year's. We'll have to, we'll see. I'll talk to Amy and we'll find out. Basically, people have to die for it to be not failed. It would have been successful in the mind of the people that was set it off. It absolutely was a failed. It was a suicide bomb deal. So, Doc, I hope I'm here Friday. Well, I'll get with you and let you know. All right, good night, everybody. I'm starting to ramble, so I need to get out of here. Let me stop this right here. Stand by. I was going to play that. Matter of fact, I'm going to close with this. Curtis and some of you new guys, I'm going to close with this and let you listen to this. And I'll go off right after this. Good night.
Dear Uncle Sam, I know you're a busy man, and tonight I write to you through tears with a trembling hand.
My name is John Q. Public, and I'm a member in good standing of an organization called America, and I have a message for those agencies and agents that work under the auspices of the Department of Justice. You have called me many things in the past: rebel, right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, to name a few. But that is not important. What I'm about to tell you is, there must be accountability in all things, sooner or later. When you sin, however big or small, you will be held accountable either in this life or the next. When you invade people's privacy, violate their rights, steal property, break up families, and hurt people, the time is fast approaching that you will be held accountable both in this life and the next. You and I took the same oath, administered by the same people. We both swore to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some of you actually feel that you honor that oath, but you violate it each time you force a young girl to her bedroom floor in nothing but her underwear and hold her there at gunpoint. Or when you shoot or stomp a family pet to death, or shoot a young boy down in cold blood in the mountains of Idaho, or incinerate over 70 innocent people in a church in Texas. Warriors indeed. How dare you call me a domestic terrorist? I go to work every day, sometimes at two jobs to make ends meet. I attend church every Sunday that I'm not working. As difficult as it is, I try to make time each day for my kids. I teach them about the Constitution and the Golden Rule. I have extra food and supplies to help myself and others through hard times. I try as hard as I can to obey the ever-increasing number of laws that are forced upon us, and I pay my fair share of taxes. I have a gun to protect myself and my family against those who would do us harm. I shouldn't have to use it to protect us against you. In fact, your organization is not even authorized by the Constitution and shouldn't be here, but since you are here, let's talk about your job description and performance. We have common enemies, you and I, that we should be united in fighting. The Founding Fathers never intended for us to fight each other. We should be as one. The current us-against-them attitude should never have been allowed to rear its ugly head. Division is unhealthy for the country. You will undoubtedly conduct more unconstitutional invasions of homes and businesses, and more innocent people will be injured or killed. A dairy in Pennsylvania, a rabbit grower in Kansas, a gun shop in New Mexico. It may even be me and my family. But let me make one thing abundantly clear. We, the people, have grown weary of living in fear. We're tired of being treated like animals. If you continue to follow the path that you are on, the time may come when you will not find us waiting to be descended upon when we least expect it. We may come to you. We outnumber you 1,000 to 1, and the same people that trained you trained many of us. We, the people, are becoming aware of those numbers. One day, you will launch one of your cowardly sneak attacks on an unsuspecting young family in Idaho, and instead of your brave sniper finding a defenseless, unarmed woman holding a baby in her arms, he may find that the tables have been turned. One day, instead of terrorizing and destroying another American family in retribution for a trivial infraction of an unconstitutional law, instead of shooting down defenseless children or young veterans that are trying only to live the American dream, you may find patriots waiting for you that have been pushed to their limit. One day, you will find that you have awakened a sleeping giant, and we, the people, will indeed hold you accountable for your evil deeds. Hundreds of men, women, and children have died at your hand because of poor information, no information, or just plain overzealous, out-of-control power freaks on an adrenaline high that have no regard for human life. Agents that think their badge is a license to kill with impunity. The difference between you and us is that we will not harm your family as long as they stay out of the fight. I don't want your family to go through what you have put many of ours through. Yes, they will be sad if you don't come home, but when the grieving is over, they will come to understand that you simply chose the wrong side. You see, this is nothing more than a conflict between good and evil. It's that simple, but this is not how it is supposed to be. This is not the America that the Founding Fathers entrusted us with. I implore each of you, before you go to work tomorrow, to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and see if you truly like what you see. If you can look at yourself and be proud of what you've done, or what you may be called upon to do, or more importantly, if you feel that you can walk uprightly before God and look Him in the eye and feel justified in what you have done, then we have nothing further to discuss. But some of you are not really jackbooted thugs. Some of you are simply misguided and feel that you really are doing the right thing. To you, I say, please, follow your conscience, do what you know in your heart is right, for we the people will hold you accountable.